Good evening. Millions more face unemployment should states go bankrupt, and a new tool for tracking coronavirus from Israeli intelligence. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with some of the news for Thursday, April 23rd. 2020. Nearly 4.5 million Americans filed for unemployment insurance last week. That raises total unemployment in the United States to over 26 million. Numbers of jobless not seen since the Great Depression 90 years ago. States are encountering problems with the sheer numbers of people applying for benefits. Computer systems dating to the 1970s, IBM mainframes, creaked under the pressure of the deluge of applicants. New York State has hired 1,000 screeners to handle the backlog. Florida has seen a near collapse of its benefits system. Only one of seven of 688,000 claims there have been paid. Meanwhile, a new poll finds that most Americans don't trust President Trump as a source of information on the coronavirus. Only 23% of Americans say they have high levels of trust in the information Trump shares. Meanwhile, in New York, Governor Cuomo used his daily news conference to blast Senate leader Mitch McConnell, who yesterday said if states can't handle the costs of the coronavirus response, they shouldn't come to the federal government for money. Instead, do what more than 700,000 Americans do every year.
Yeah, I would certainly be in favor of allowing states to use the bankruptcy route. It saved some cities, and there's no good reason for it not to be available. My guess is their first choice would be for the federal government to borrow money from future generations to send it down to them now so they don't have to do that. That's not something I'm going to be in favor of.
The notion of a government entity forced into bankruptcy riled New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who responded angrily that it was McConnell's state dragging down the economy.
Okay, let me just go back to my self-proclaimed Grim Reaper, Senator McConnell, for another second. He represents the state of Kentucky, okay? When it comes to fairness, New York State puts much more money into the federal pot than it takes out, okay? At the end of the year, we put in to that federal pot $116 billion more than we take out, okay? His state, the state of Kentucky, takes out $148 billion more than they put in. Okay? So he's a federal legislator. He's distributing the federal pot of money. New York puts in more money to the federal pot than it takes out. His state takes out more than it puts in. Senator McConnell, who's getting bailed out here? It's your state that is living on the money that we generate. Your state is getting bailed out, not my state.
Meanwhile, in Washington, the House of Representatives voted along party lines to create a committee to review distribution of coronavirus relief funds. Members voted in staggered groups to limit the spread of the virus. Each group was followed by disinfecting for 15 minutes of the House chambers. And the United States is coming closer to a shortage of meat in supermarkets. Tyson Foods Incorporated says it's idling its largest pork plant that makes six major meat facilities to shutter. That makes six major meat facilities shuttering in the last few weeks. Meat prices are starting to surge, yet farmers don't have a market for their animals. That's causing hog futures to drop. And retail costs may rise as grocery stores mandate rationing on pork chops. Things are so dire that Iowa, the biggest hog state, activated the National Guard to help protect supplies. At the same time, unions are complaining that workers are being forced into crowded assembly lines without protective gear. The workers are mostly immigrants working at minimum wage. At the Tyson plant in Waterloo, Iowa, workers say they were called to work even when showing symptoms of COVID-19. The executive director of the Center for Worker Justice in Iowa City is Rafael Morataya.
They have to implement the safety standard for workers, right? Because that's part of the problem, right? That the line is so fast. And I don't remember how many hogs they kill a day, 1,000 pigs every day. The people need to work. They are concerned about the economy. Yes, I think we all agree about the economy. But then what about the life? These people, right, or the workers that we are talking about, the workers are risking their life they're struggling to demand their employer to do more to protect them. If they are essential, but they are not treated that way. Workers in the meat plant and cashier are the front line of this crisis. How much is the economic cost for those towns that have been affected? Before yesterday, I think it was 184 cases. I don't know by today how many cases more there in Columbia Jackson and around that.
Rafael Morataya is the executive director of the Center for Worker Justice in Iowa City. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. And here back in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that a study of antibody tests from across the state indicates the coronavirus death rate may be lower than some estimates. 3,000 antibody tests conducted across New York indicate 13.9% of state residents are positive for antibodies. But those figures vary dramatically by region. While 21.2% of New York City residents tested positive, only 3.6% of residents from upstate New York have the antibodies. The antibody testing also showed a vast discrepancy in positive tests between white people and African Americans and Latinos.
By race, Asians about 11.7%, African American 22%, Latino Hispanic 22%, multi none other 22%, white 9.1%. This reflects more the regional breakdown. African American and Latinos are in this survey disproportionately from New York City, and New York City is at 21%. So the African American number, Latino number, is 22%. But and the upstate whites, they're talking about more upstate, which is 9, but it's 3.6 in the survey.
Nursing homes continue to see alarming rates of the virus. Nearly a quarter of New York's 15,740 coronavirus deaths have come from long-term care facilities. Many of the cases affecting people of color are coming because so many Black and Latinx people work as caregivers. Queens Council member Donovan Richards spoke about conditions contributing to the disparity.
Many of our communities who are on the front lines are specifically impacted by this. And a lot of this has to do with a lot of the inequities and systematic issues that the government has not necessarily dealt with, whether it's investment, whether it's policy. You know, the people in Black and brown communities, when America gets a cold, we get pneumonia. And it's no different here, except that we are getting a death sentence in this specific. You look at the inequities around testing even, right? How certain communities got testing and how certain communities didn't get testing. It speaks to where we are as a city and how far we have to go.
When Donovan Richards is the only New York City Council member with a private jail in his district, he says the multi-billion-dollar contractor running the federal lockup has failed to protect staff and inmates from the coronavirus wildfire, he called it, inside. So far, 38 inmates and 21 staff members have tested positive for COVID-19 inside the 222-bed Queens detention facility. Similar problems have been plaguing New York State prisons and jails. When asked about the situation of the coronavirus in the jails, Cuomo punted the question to Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul.
So as of today, there's 263 prisoners who have tested positive for COVID. And then from that, we are quarantining people. There's 1,397 people in the prison system which have been quarantined. We actually have not seen the kind of outbreaks that we feared that we would see. We're monitoring it very closely. We've done a number of things, including stopping visitation and doing isolation above and beyond, but within humanity, making sure that you're not putting people in solitary confinement. So we're monitoring this very closely. We're getting briefed on it every morning. We've already taken a number of steps, the technical parole violations, the people over 55 with the 90 days. And as the situation evolves and warrants changes, we'll change.
And we're listening to Kathy Hochul there. She's Lieutenant Governor of the State of New York. Meanwhile, Leonard Carter, a 61-year-old inmate at Queensboro Correctional Facility, died on April 14th after contracting COVID-19. Carter was 6 weeks away from being released from prison after he was granted parole in January 2020 after serving decades behind bars. Earlier today, a group of faith leaders held a vigil for Carter in front of the jail that was broadcast on Zoom.
Mm-hmm. We stand here in front of Queensborough Correctional Facility, where Leonard Carter was incarcerated just 6 weeks away from his release. It was here that he caught the virus. It was here in the dormitory-style housing where social distancing is not possible, where he got sick, and he passed away in a local hospital from this illness. We are committed to fighting in Leonard Carter's memory. We are committed to fighting for all people who remain incarcerated. We call on Governor Cuomo, you must release elders. You must release people who are immunocompromised. You must release the thousands of New Yorkers within a year of release. They should not be put to death by virus. Pastor Isaac Scott, an advocate at the Center for Justice at Columbia.
No one should be defined, ridiculed, and judged by one situation or one circumstance that has taken control of their entire life. But because of protocol and policy and institutional mandate, he was mandated to stay longer in prison, which then turned into a death sentence for Mr. Carter. Those who are aging and of a compromised immune system are of the most vulnerable. And the virus is spreading 6-7 times greater within facilities than it is in the public.
Mike Shervington from the Release Aging People in Prison campaign.
This very day marks the 34th anniversary of my arrest that led to my own incarceration for a little over 29 years in the state prison system. I know firsthand what it is like to get substandard or practically non-existent medical care in the first place, as well as to have to contend with virus outbreaks and epidemics inside. I can only imagine the horror, the shock, the fear that people inside are experiencing right now.
We are now lighting candles in honor of Leonard's memory. We are here to honor the 43,000 people who remain behind bars in prisons in New York State. Rabbi Rachel Timoner.
In the beginning of the Torah, we learn that all human beings are created in the image of God, every single one. And so when a life is lost, because every human life is created in the image of God, God is diminished. And we say the Mourner's Kaddish as a way of remembering the person, but also as a way of honoring God in the diminishment that comes to our world when a life is lost, particularly when a life is lost unnecessarily. Yitgadal v'yitkadash shemei rabah. Be'alma divra chirutei ve'amlich machutei. Del kol yoshvei tevel. Imru. Amen.
Reverend Maria Lopez of the Park Avenue Church.
We are here for Leonard Carter because the state killed him. The city killed him. Instead of leaving this man go home, this man did his time. He did 25 years to life. He didn't owe nobody no time. And he comes to the city with the hope that he's going to see his family and his friends. But no, they lock him up again. He already had completed his time. So this is abuse of power. Today, we honor Leonard Carter. Carter, rest in peace.
There are 344 individuals incarcerated statewide who are awaiting release after being granted parole. The only legal mechanism that could grant these cases an early release is a sentencing commutation from the governor. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In more news on the cusp of health and politics, this time it originates in Israel, where the number of COVID-19 fatalities rose to 191 as a Tel Aviv hospital reported 2 deaths from the virus on Thursday. The country's Ministry of Health reported that the number of confirmed coronavirus cases is 14,592. 2. As part of the Jewish state's response to the pandemic, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has authorized the country's internal security agency called Shin Bet to tap into a trove of collected information from cell phones. Richard Silverstein writes on security matters, his most recent article, Israel is Militarizing and Monetizing the COVID-19 Pandemic, was published in Jacobin magazine.
It is a database that includes all the private data on every Israeli citizen, whether Palestinian or Jewish. It includes all of their private information, their phone number, their address, family members. But it also captures their geolocation data so they can track people, individual people, over the course of long periods of time. They can track who these individuals interact with. They can track also communications, emails, text messages, phone calls. They can also track the individuals that these people interact with. So this was originally set up as a counter-terror database, but now it's being used to track coronavirus victims and anyone that they've had contact with. It's clear as well that Israel, private companies in Israel, like NSO Group, are trying to adapt this tool into a civilian product that can be exported to foreign countries. There's a lot of inherent dangers here of mass surveillance, of violation of privacy, violation of individual rights, and Israel as a state doesn't really have those protections embedded in its society. And my concern is that when it would be exported to foreign countries, it would trump any individual rights protections that those societies have just because of how incredibly powerful this tool and this data is.
Isn't this a good use of something that could have had various purposes in the past?
Well, I think that it is potentially, it's a good use. I mean, obviously you want to maintain the safety, public health of your citizens, and you want to be able to know who is sick or who might be sick. But when you add to it the fact that Israel is really I call it a garrison state, it's also a mass surveillance state where security trumps all civil liberties issues, I think that's where you get into dangerous territories. You could use this technology if there were protections inherent or placed on its use. But Israel is going to be marketing a product that really is going to be wide open to any country, including whether they be democratic or repressive. Those countries can use it in the most intrusive way possible, or hopefully they'll modify it and place restrictions on it. But my concern is that Israel will produce a product that could be extremely intrusive and invasive.
Do you have any evidence of companies or countries that have already purchased this software?
Well, Bloomberg published a story about 2 weeks ago saying that NSO Group is actually marketing it. It did say that it already has clients for this product. It did not specify who the clients might be. So we don't know exactly, and NSO Group is a very secretive company that doesn't really want to reveal the countries that it's marketing to because its technology is extremely controversial and may have been used in the process of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. So we don't know the specifics on that, but I do know that the Israeli embassy in Holland has informed Israeli companies that Holland wants to buy a product somewhat like this. This is an example of the kind of countries that NSO Group would be trying to market to. Mm-hmm. This really is keeping track of every Israeli citizen, where they go, what they do, who they talk to. And you can track this all the way back in time if you want to. You can't yet go into the future in time. That's maybe for a movie, but they're really bringing nightmares that we've only seen on cinema into the real world.
Richard Silverstein writes on security matters. And that's some of the news for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. News was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson, doing a great job under difficult circumstances. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.